This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Here's WSMI's Tim Myers and Dave Jenkins and a room full of folks.
We made it back from the Chili Dome.
Yes, we did.
Big show today. We've got BJ Ogata and Marcus Sitko of the Staunton Bulldogs. We're going to be talking to them here coming up later on in the hour. Of course, Marcus, the three-time state champion, fresh off of his big weekend a few weeks ago. And BJ Ogata, he is getting ready for his first season as the head football coach of the Staunton Bulldogs. So we look forward to that conversation coming up later in the hour here on Sports Saturday. And we look forward now to having a conversation about the 19th annual Bud Reinicke Memorial Golf Tournament. And once again, we're happy to have in studio Amy and Rich Reinicke and Mr. Earl Meyer. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
And it just seems the year in between goes so fast, and I'm not doing anything with the tournament, so I can only imagine how fast it goes for you guys. I know so much work goes into this tournament, and this year, a different venue. It's been at the Country Club in Hillsboro in years past, not so this year.
Yep, we've been switching it up between the two courses there in here in Montgomery County, between Indian Springs and the Country Club. So this year it's out at Indian Springs.
Talk a little bit about Indian Springs. I know it's a beautiful looking golf course.
I'll let a golfer talk about it.
Earl?
Oh, you're going to let me talk about it and you call me a golfer? Okay. Anyway, there are 18 holes down at Indian Springs, plenty of water holes, plenty of places lose golf balls, plenty of rough, plenty of places to lose golf balls, and there are plenty of hills.
Yeah, I've lost plenty of golf balls at that course.
Yes, I have too. Don't want my wife to hear that because she thinks I never lose a golf ball anywhere. But
I lose mine in the middle of the fairway.
Well, I've lost a few there too, especially this week with all the rain and you know how things are growing.
And it looks like a week from today will be a little better weather than we've had here, but the tournament coming up a week from today. And I guess, Amy, if you will, the 19th annual tournament. And let's go back to the beginning and talk about how this all got started.
Well, my father-in-law passed away, and he was a big sports advocate for all, you know, it didn't matter what kind of sport. So the boys decided to do this, and you know, as a memorial to their father.
And Rich, I know that year after year that you guys really are just touched by the number of people that have such kind words to say about Bud.
Oh, absolutely. This has been overwhelming over the years to see where it's grown. Because when we started out, we were in Central Park. We didn't have the sports complex out there. So, you know, it's just, we never dreamed we'd be doing this 19 years later, you know.
And Bud was a guy, if it was sports-related, Hillsboro-related, he was there. So in a lot of ways, that sports complex really does leave a great memory.
Yes, it does. My first experience with Bud was many, many years ago when he came to me and told me we didn't have water fountains down at Central Park for the kids, water fountains that worked. And he thought we should put one down there. He saw to it that we came up with the funding for it. And then when we got out to the sports complex, maintenance became a problem, and the Reinicke tournament has provided many dollars. It's in excess of $55,000 now for maintenance at the sports complex. And that maintenance not only goes for the baseball program, but it also goes for the soccer program too.
It's amazing how things always start so small. From a water fountain to an entire complex.
That's right.
Just staggering. And I know that the folks in this community have always been so generous with money and time. And an event like this is really a good example of that. And if Amy, Rich, whichever one of you would like to speak to the volunteers and the people behind the scenes that beyond you guys that really make this thing work.
Well, just the people that come out and support us by playing golf, you know. We always think, you know, we need teams, but it always comes through in the end.
And so are the spots for the teams filled up, or do you still have a few
available? No, we still have openings available, and we have a couple of special things we're doing this year. Jennings, they're doing a hole-in-one for a car.
Oh. PGA Tour style. Oh, that's excellent.
The long par three, and then the National Bank donated some Cardinal tickets, and we're doing a silent auction on them so anybody could win the tickets. So if you just come down to the course and want to, you know, bid on those tickets because they're good tickets.
And we have Fusion Fitness involved also.
Right. And, of course, we're going to have Uncle Ralph's pork chops. So
that's outstanding. And fashionably late, as always, Mr. Roy Hurdle has graced us with his presence. Good morning, sir.
Golly, you guys get out of bed awful early.
It's the same thing every year, Roy. We know you're going to roll. You're a few minutes late even by your standards here.
Well, yeah,
I had you pegged at 9:07.
I'll tell you what, I got my eyelids they're propped open with toothpicks.
Roy, obviously here to talk about the Bud Reinecke Memorial Golf Tournament. Just give us your kind of overarching thoughts on this event and how much it has meant over the years.
Well, Earl probably has already told how much it's raised, but this has been a real big fundraiser for the Sports Association for a long, long time. And, of course, we always talk about Bud. You threw a ball out, kicked a ball, threw it out, had a bat and a ball. Bud was going to be there to watch. And, of course, he enjoyed watching his kids play ball and his grandchildren play ball. But and the family started this, 19 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did know that.
You're on top of it.
I'm on top of that. Next year will be the 20th year in honor of Bud. And it's benefited the Sports Association greatly. And, of course, the park, the sports complex, was started in 1998. First ball game was played in 2000. So shortly, it's getting a lot of age on it. It's going to need some work. They all do. But this money has helped maintain it. And what we raise this year will probably go into some maintenance, I would think. Earl.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. We're all of our equipment is getting older. Our lawnmowers are wearing out. They're being well used.
A lot of grass out there.
Well, Roy says he's worn out, but we all knew that. So, but the money that we raised last year went to purchase new tops for the dugouts. Those have been completed at all four diamonds. We're looking at maybe doing something at the Bud Reinecke diamond, which is diamond number 5. But all of the money we earn will be used for maintenance. So if anybody out there has a nice big 60-inch lawnmower they want to give us, we'll be glad to take it. Sure. Did you hear that, Roy?
New.
Yeah, Roy says new, but
I sounded not, personalized.
I am not choosy. I'll take a good used one.
We are talking about the 19th annual Bud Reinecke Memorial Golf Tournament. It will be a week from today, the 27th, at Indian Springs Golf Course. And Roy was talking about how Bud loved to just watch, no matter what the sport was. And it just got me thinking, out at the Hillsborough Country Club, under the pavilion there, off the first tee, which is where we would often set up and where people congregate, you always had to be on your toes because you never knew if a golf ball might be coming your way, shanked off the first tee. Will there be similar fun at Indian Springs? So they have a setup where you can put yourself in harm's way.
Oh, well, with some of the golfers that play in this, if I was playing in it, let me see, it wouldn't matter where you were standing out there.
Middle of the fairway is the safest place to be?
If you're standing out in the middle of the fairway, it would be the safest place.
You're talking about the pavilion. I remember one of Roy's tee-offs about 10 years ago. We never did find the ball, but it went toward the pavilion, and everyone dove out of the way.
Scatter.
Well, that wasn't the best one. The one went between my legs. It bounced off a tree.
That, for some reason, just seems right, Roy.
Well, my son said, no more. You'll never tee off again. So I haven't. I gave it up.
We need to get to a break here on WSMI Sports Saturday. We're talking about the Bud Reinecke Memorial Golf Tournament. Also coming up later this hour, we're going to be talking Staunton Athletics. Marcus Sitko, the 3-time state track and field champion, is in studio, along with new football coach BJ Ogata. A lot more to get to here on Sports Saturday. We're back following these messages.
Just wondering, do they provide safety equipment when playing golf at the Bud Reinecke Golf Tournament?
Only if Hurdle's playing.
Only if Hurdle's playing?
Yeah, safety equipment required if Roy's in the tee box.
Yes.
We're talking about the 19th annual Bud Reinecke Memorial Golf Tournament coming up a week from today at Indian Springs Golf Course. Amy Reinecke, Rich Reinecke, Earl Meyer, and Roy Hurdle joining us in studio to talk about the event. And Amy, teams are still available.
Right, and it's $240 per team if paid or reserved by today. So you can call telephone numbers. You can call our home phone. Just leave a message on the answer machine at 217-537-3159. Josh Anderson's phone is 217-556-1643 or 556-1628. And then if you can't play because you've got something going on that day, that's great, but maybe you could sponsor a hole for $50. We have lots of sponsors that help us every year. Blunt Construction, Dr. Hess, Alan Pretner, Jennings has always been very good to us. Security National Bank, First Community Bank. It goes on and on. McKay's, you know, lots of people in this area. Laughlin Electric, Hayes Abrasives, National Bank. So, you know.
That's a good list.
Yeah. We always have a lot of good sponsors, and they come back and help us year after year.
And you mentioned Jennings, one of your good, loyal sponsors. And we had said earlier that they were going to be supplying a car for the hole-in-one. Hold the brakes on that. Pump them up. Hold on. Roy's got an update.
Well, the insurance cost on that's about $450. So Jennings is going to give us some cash to give away for longest drive, closest to the pin. Don't you give cash away for that, Earl?
Sure do.
They are now.
There you go. Instead of having to pay an insurance company $450 for the insurance, they'd rather give the money to the sports association. So we were going to try that car deal, but they said, you know, wouldn't it be better if you just took the cash? Well, yeah, cash is always better.
Right.
So
that's right.
So anyway, that's what.
Oh,
we're
what do you
do.
Need insurance for? The odds of someone holing out. Come on,
yeah, well, yeah, but
come on.
Maybe next year.
Next year.
Next year is the 20.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, next year. Well, with the anniversary being the 20th anniversary, maybe we could we can find some cheaper insurance. I mean, I understand $425 for somebody to walk away with a $20,000 automobile, that's not a bad deal. But they felt that the money would be better spent by giving us the money than for the car. And I agree with them.
Yep, so, I can't argue.
No.
We are going to have a chipping contest right there by the clubhouse. So that's going to be like a 50-50. You pay so much to get in the contest, and then whoever wins gets half of the proceeds. So.
And you guys, door prizes and the like?
Yeah, we have lots of those. Jorn Signs always helps us every year. With our sign that with all of our sponsors' names. Very good about donating their time for that.
No hula skirt contest.
Oh,
this
no.
Year.
What?
Yep, we're going to drop that this year. We thought we'd do the chipping contest instead, but we may bring the hula skirt or something better back next year.
Yeah.
Always something to look forward to.
coconut brawl.
Hey, it's not a good golf tournament unless you come away with a nice bribery photo out of it, you know? Always popular. Guys, thank you so much for coming in today to talk about this golf tournament coming up a week from today at Indian Springs. Anything else that you would like to get out? Again, the phone number if people would like to participate in the tournament or if they would just like to just make a simple donation. How do they do it?
Well, they can mail that to the, it's on the backside. They can mail that to the Hillsboro Sports Association, P.O. Box 484, Bud Reinecke Benefit, Hillsboro, Illinois, 62049. Again, the phone numbers to reserve a team today, 537-3159, 556-1643, 556-1628. And we want to thank WSMI, too.
And as always, if you can always call the radio station, Terry can get you in contact with all the right people.
But if they are going to send some money to be a hole sponsor to be included on the advertising that we do for all of our sponsors, they need to call Amy and tell them they sent the money so she can get them down to put on the sign.
And what time does it start a week from today?
8:30 shotgun start.
8:30 shotgun start. All right.
Amy? Always a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So.
240 per team. And
cheap at any price.
This day and age, for, absolutely.
Even for a pork chop.
Yeah.
You're getting golf and a pork chop
and
for that.
And a pork chop.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We feed them good.
Always have. The 19th annual Bud Reineke Memorial Golf Tournament coming up June 27th at Indian Springs Golf Course. Amy and Rich Reineke, Earl Meyer, Roy Hurdle, thank you so much for coming in
thank
to talk
you
this
for
morning.
Having us.
And hopefully the weather works for you.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Hopefully.
You don't control that, Roy?
I can control the weather.
Okay. I thought you could.
Coming out here, there was about a whole bunch of pheasants down at the Butler Tee. It's pheasants. They've been flushed out of the bushes from the water.
That's why you were late then.
Well,
you stopped to look at the pheasants.
I was gawking at the pheasants.
It was turkeys.
It was not. I know what a turkey is. I am a turkey. What are you talking about?
You can't argue with facts. You can't argue with facts. On the other side, three-time state track and field champ Marcus Sitko, Sports Saturday back after this. All right, Tito, thank you so much. Back here on WSMI Sports Saturday, and we thank the folks with the Bud Reineke Memorial Golf Tournament to come in this morning and talk about that event coming up a week from today at Indian Springs Golf Course. Shotgun start at 8:30. What town do they consider Indian Springs in?
I always thought it was Fillmore.
Fillmore.
I think it's Fillmore.
There you go.
It's on the way to
Van Buren'sburg.
Van Buren's, is it?
On the road to Van Buren'sburg?
I think it's Van Buren'sburg or very close to it.
It's right outside, yeah, because you go past Indian Springs and there's...
The greater metropolitan area.
Yes, there's Van Buren'sburg. Yeah.
There you go. We're happy to be joined in studio right now by Marcus Sitko and BJ Ogata. BJ will be the head football coach for Staunton coming up in the fall. And unfortunately for BJ, Marcus's eligibility has ran out for the Staunton Bulldogs as he just completed a spectacular high school athletic career, capping it off with 3 state championships at the track and field meet a couple of weeks ago in Charleston. And Marcus, thank you so much for coming in studio, sir. And I guess just first off, a couple of weeks have passed here. How does it feel to be referred to as a 3-time track and field state champion?
I mean, it's fun, but I take pride in it, but it's not something I'm overwhelmed about because I realize now I'm going to college, so now I'm back at the bottom of the totem pole. So, I mean, I'm enjoying it while it lasts, but I realize that, well, it's not going to last too much longer.
You know what, though? The fact that you can have that perspective and realization now before stepping on campus, I would think speaks to, I don't know, your mentality and how you approach things to realize, you know what, I'm at the top of the heap now, but I'm about to be a small fish in a big pond.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. I get that a lot. You know, you're a big fish in a little pond, but now you're going to be a big fish in maybe the ocean. And in the ocean, there's sharks. And that's something I always got to think about. I just got to work hard, I guess, get back to, I guess, competing standards with everyone else at college.
BJ, we've had a chance to talk here a little bit off the air with Marcus, and you've been around him for years now. I'm just impressed with his outlook and how he's able to kind of process things as a teenager like this.
Yeah, definitely. I did get to see him. I was, you know, coaching him in football and track over the last 4 years. His development, you know, a lot of maturity, especially over the last couple of years that he developed, and a really good perspective and as hard a worker as I ever coached, which will definitely help him at the next level when he moves on.
So what was the first thing you thought? Because the 100-meter dash in the final was a photo finish. I think 0.02 of a second is what it was. But BJ said, well, we knew Marcus had it the whole way just from watching the race. But there was that moment, about 60 seconds, where before they posted the score, what was going through your mind as you're sitting there like, all right, I've done all I can do now. What are you thinking at that point, waiting for the score to be posted or the time to be posted?
At that point, I was just kind of, I don't know, I didn't really know where the finish line was, so I was like, I think I got him, but I'm not sure. And I just eventually just kind of looked up there and realized I won and gave a good old fist pump to realize that I got it.
So you got the 100-meter dash, you got the long jump, and you got the triple jump.
Yeah.
You had to go through the prelims for all those different events, but the finals for all three were on the same day, correct?
Yeah.
So talk to us about that championship day. You know it's going to be the final day of competition for you as a high school athlete. You got 3 finals on the docket. Kind of just set it up for us, the order of the events and kind of what you were doing through the process of winning those 3.
Well, I guess started by waking up and getting breakfast, and then after all that whole ordeal, realized, well, I got to compete today. So warmed up, you know, kind of getting mentally prepared. They had this, like, introduction of athletes that I kind of I don't really want to
messing up with your routine.
Yeah, I just kind of, you know, just kind of want to get into the mojo of everything here. So just, you know, looking down at the long jump, warming up. Our assistant coach, Andy Guy, he's like, you know, you don't have to warm up yet. You still have an hour. I know, but I was just nervous. I was like, I didn't jump good at prelims, had a break, did some practice on my break, felt a little more confident, still wasn't sure. Came through the, started doing some jumps once it started, still wasn't doing, you know, what I really wanted to be doing. Finally, Mr. Ogata here is like, you know what, let one rip. It's your last one. Go for it. So I just did and realized as soon as I jumped, I looked back. I'm like, I had it. I knew it. Mm. So I looked down over 23, done. Mm. I'm going to call it a solid day for long jump there.
So I guess in some ways, mentally, you had a little hurdle to get over to realize, wait, this is just a jump that I've been doing my whole life.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Finals, or not finals, prelims, I was, I guess, still kind of nervous, you know, not feeling the greatest with my jump. And then during finals, I realized, well, it's now or never. This is it. I'm senior year, last time. Give it your all. Final jump, go for it. So
long jump was first.
Correct.
And then the triple jump?
Yeah, triple jump. Actually, they started as I was finishing my last jump, I think.
Started warm-ups.
Yeah, they started the warm-ups. So right after that, I had all my adrenaline going. And then, you know, I did, I think, two steps and tripling. And I was like, you know, let's just go for it. I'm feeling confident. I feel pretty good. And, you know, got one state title. Go for a second. Started jumping. First jump, just jumped my best. 46.2.
Shorted yourself an inch.
Yeah. I guess, yeah. And so I guess got that, realized, wow, I know I could do better because my second phase was awful, but it's a pretty good start. I mean, I saw everyone else jumping mid-44s. I think was there 145?
Corey jumped 45.
Yeah, there was 145, and then I was like, okay, I think I got this, but, you know, just keep trying to improve. Never did, but I tried.
When I watched the triple jump, to me, that's one of the more impressive, I guess, field events, just all the different things that go into it. Is that more of a challenge than long jump, or is it just a matter of a different technique?
Yeah, I would say it's more of a challenge because I think it's the second phase is the main thing everyone gets trashed on pretty much. My second phase was maybe a foot, and then you would jump. But, you know, you get a kid out there that has a good second phase, he will be a good triple jumper, and usually they're kind of scrawny, thin, you know, they're able to transfer their momentum a lot easier. Me being a little bit bigger for a jumper, it was kind of hard, but I just made it work for my last phase.
It's like when you roll in for those field events with some of the kids, who's this guy? Like, what's he doing here? Yeah. He can't be built like this doing that.
There was one kid, I faced him at the Capitol Classics. He's in 2A, I believe, and he beat me at Capitol Classics. And he's like, there's no way you're a jumper. You're way too built to be a jumper. I'm like, well, let's see what happens.
We'll find out, won't we? And he probably did find out, didn't he?
Yeah, he's like, wow, you're pretty good for your size. Thanks. You're pretty good for your size. You're like 120. Congrats.
That's awesome. So you win all three state championships in the 100 and then the long jump and the triple jump. But the fact that I love this story, the young man who won the 200 meters, he had a little comment for you after you had won the 100 meter dash.
Yeah, he was just happy I didn't run the 200. He was, you know, thank you. You're welcome. I'm solid about this. I really wanted to run the 200, but I would rather try to get some more people to state. Got DQ'd in sectionals, so that wasn't a proud moment. But
that had to be a really neat feeling to win three state championships and then have a kid who won the 200 say, you know what, I'm really glad you didn't run that because it would have been yours. So that just has to be an amazing feeling.
Oh, yeah, it was pretty funny. I laughed a few times about it. You know, thinking back, it's still pretty funny. And, I mean, three is good enough for me.
And Marcus, I think your story, I think, is a good one for young kids about just perseverance and sticking with it. Your senior year, we know it now, three-time state track and field champion. How did your junior high track season end in sixth grade?
Quit.
Seventh grade?
Quit.
How about that? In eighth grade?
Eighth grade, one long jump.
How about that?
Yeah, just stuck with it. That final last one, you know, see if I'm any good at it. Found out I was pretty good at it, so I might as well stick with it through high school.
Pretty good at it indeed. BJ, could you imagine if Marcus had just, going into his eighth grade year, said, you know what? Nah, I don't want to mess with it. But that kind of speaks to the character of the young man.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously as you're growing up, you probably make some decisions. You know, you say you quit track a couple years, and, you know, look, kids make decisions like that all the time. But, yeah, I definitely turned out the way it was supposed to, that he decided to stick it out his eighth grade year. If he hadn't, I imagine the baseball coach probably would have been a lot happier over the last 4 years. But as it was, I got the benefit from having him as part of the track program, so it was nice.
What's it like being up there that state weekend for track and field? It's such a different type of environment. I mean, you obviously experienced the top of the mountain for football, but track and field, so many people up there.
Yeah, it's chaotic. I'm sure Ogata would agree here. It's just the things that go on at state, you're – intimidated, truly. I was intimidated the whole time. It's just the feeling of, you know, who's better, who's gonna get there today, not any other time, it's today.
And I guess it's, you know, track and field, it's the ultimate Olympic event, because that is what the Olympics were. It's athleticism in its purest form. But for Olympians, every 4 years, so you got one chance. In a lot of ways, the state track and field meet is just like that. You could have the best meet season leading up to it, one bad day, and in a way, none of it matters.
Yeah, and that's what makes track a little more unique than some of the other sports, is you have to perform. You know, we try to tell our kids going into the season, you know, a lot of these meets, you don't want to say they don't matter, but they don't really count for anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you can only win the county on one day. You can only win the conference on one day, and, you know, the only place you can qualify for state is sectional, and that's the only place you can win. Marcus jumped 23 feet three times before that, but if he hadn't jumped 23 feet at the state track meet, he's not a state champion, you know. And that, so that's, it is very unique in that you have to perform on that one day, and that's the only chance you get. There's no, you know, there's not a conference season leading up to it. And so it does, you know, mentally, it's a different preparation for athletes for sure.
Three-time state champion Marcus Sitko in studio with new head football coach BJ Ogata for the Staunton Bulldogs. We need a break here on Sports Saturday. We'll come back and talk more with BJ and Marcus following these messages on WSMI.
Bruin from the gun. Rolls near side now. He's in trouble. Keeps it alive with his legs. He's going to throw. Uh-oh. Dangerous pass. Sitko caught it! Touchdown! Touchdown! Sitko caught it! And double coverage! 41 seconds left! Staunton has the lead! Oh my goodness! Oh goodness, Sitko! Cinderella is alive!
I saw it. I still don't believe it. How did you catch that ball, Marcus?
With my hands. It just happened. I don't know. It was just one of those moments. It just happened to go through two defenders and into mine.
Tell me that might not even be the best catch you made during that playoff run. You had a big one against Carlisle.
Yeah, Carlisle really surprised me. I don't know. I caught it. I didn't realize I even had it. I just kind of sat there, cradled the ball, like, what just happened? And it was just one of those moments, the spur of the moment. I didn't know what to do. I just couldn't process it at that time.
BJ Ogata, you'll be the head football coach coming up in the fall for Staunton. You were up in the booth that day. You had quite the view of that ball game that afternoon. And that's one of those games that, as I think about it now, I still don't know how you guys won. And a lot of times when you see a team make a big comeback like that, it'll be the other team, you know, kind of gave it away, a lot of turnovers or sloppy play. Not really the case. Auburn, you know, a couple snaps sailed over the punter's head, but it was really the Staunton defense making stops and then Bruin and Sitko doing what they did. But just an amazing, amazing ball game.
Yeah, I mean, I said before, I was actually going through in my head, we were down 10 points. I remember thinking, well, you know, what a great season this turned out to be, and, you know, how proud I was of those kids for the effort they gave and, you know, winning those games leading up to that. And then Bruin returned the kickoff down to the 5 or 4 or 5 yard line, and I was like, well, we're still okay, we're still going. And then we scored, and, you know, you said made the defensive stop. And on that play, you heard the replay, I remember, you know, Bruin got in a little trouble in the backfield and rolled out. And I was thinking to myself, okay, you got out of trouble, just throw the ball away.
Yeah.
I guess we had still had another down coming up. Because that was, I think that was only third down, and he just threw it up for grabs. And I, like you said, I don't, we and I had the benefit of being able to watch that play on replay, you know, on the film afterwards. And I watched it three or four times and still don't know how he came down with the ball in that crowd of people.
And that game kind of, you know, summarized your season. I mean, you got off to a, I think you got off to a pretty good start, ended up struggling in the middle of the season. Obviously, Jake, your quarterback, got hurt. Probably snuck into the playoffs with a 5-4 record, but you didn't give up, especially the season you had prior to that where you missed the playoffs by going 4-5. To go from missing the playoffs, go 4-5, to the next season you're 5-4, getting in and getting an 8 seed, playing a 1, and going all the way through each game, you know, each week. I mean, you guys never give up.
Yeah, it was definitely a special season and just a great group of kids that to work with all the way through there.
And Marcus, I loved you had a great story on that big kickoff return that Bruin had. You had an interesting view for that play.
Oh yeah, I got rocked to start off and I got back up, started running after him. I'm just yelling stride, Bruin, stride, and I just hear him yelling, I can't, and it was just. The way he was running, you could just tell he just couldn't do it. He couldn't lift his knees. His legs were just done. He just couldn't run no more.
And, you know, I think for a lot of times, like from a broadcast perspective and a fan perspective, when you sit in the bleachers, you know, you think, well, come on, do it. But when you're beat, you're beat.
Yeah. And that was a heck of a run from him. And I was thoroughly impressed. But just the way he just started running the last, you know, 10 yards, it was like, jump, do something, just get in there, do it. And, you know, what happens and end up still scoring, so can't complain too much.
You know, it worked out very good
in
the end. And, of course, you go on to the state championship game then and face Sterling Newman Central Catholic. Just kind of talk a little bit about what it was like to be in the locker room pregame, warming up on the collegiate, a D1 field like that. Just what was that like? Because that's an experience that very few people get to realize.
It was definitely an experience, you know. The locker room was intimidating. You walk in, you get free mouthpieces. That was cool. They had a little boiling or hot water for you, and you could get a new one. I grabbed like 6. Might as well, they're free.
Absolutely.
Grabbed a few towels as well, but I'm not sure if those are free.
They are now.
Yeah. And then when we were warming up, you know, we're all pretty – we're getting amped. I remember I was practicing some punts. Even though during the game my punts were awful, they're atrocious. And I was talking to Bruin. I'm like, hey, I bet you I could hit the ceiling. Of course, he didn't believe me. So, you know, I took a few warm-ups. I'm like, I could hit the ceiling. I think I could do it. And then I think it was my 4th or 5th practice, hit the ceiling, and he's like, there's no way. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you do that. And then come out to the actual game and punt maybe 10 yards. It was
I guess, did the field, did it seem bigger?
Yeah, it seemed ginormous.
Yeah.
Because,
you know, like the Hoosiers thing, like you bring the tape measure out and measure the basket to say it's 10 feet. But I would imagine for football, BJ, that's a lot harder to do.
Yeah.
To make you think, you know, no, it's the same.
Yeah. It's a lot of it is just the background, you know, when things are so much farther back from the field than they were. It does. It looks a lot bigger, even though, you know, like you can tell yourself in your mind all you want, it's only 100 yards. It's still 100 yards. You can see the yard lines. It's only 100 yards. But just that, you know, the whole stadium is so much bigger. It is hard to get that perspective of, you know, it messes with your head a little bit.
Now, is that natural grass or is that artificial?
Artificial.
Turf? So yeah, what was that turf like?
It was hard. Not used to it. I know I got a few balls passed to me and I just, you know, couldn't get my footing afterwards and I just fell every time. And just something we've never really experienced before as a team, so it was kind of hard, I guess. I remember Scheller got brand new spikes for the game that said that might help him get some traction, and I guess it did, actually, even though he rolled his ankle, but he had pretty good traction the whole game.
Other than the ankle tweak.
Yeah.
Now, did you guys get to did you get any chance to practice on any of the – I know there aren't a lot of areas.
You did. You went somewhere.
Edwardsville.
Edwardsville.
Yeah, okay. They allowed us to practice on the field, and it was cold.
Maybe the coldest day of the year.
It was awful. Our practice was probably the worst practice we've ever had. Everyone was just huddled. Run the play again? No. We're all shaking here. And there's no trees or anything to block the wind, so the wind's blowing through. It was – worst experience of practice I've ever went through.
and one of the, my favorite stories of all time, and I'll just look for a simple yes or no just for confirmation. We don't need to get into it too deep. But is it in fact true that after the state championship game on that fateful afternoon, during the handshake line at midfield, you were in fact recruited by Sterling Newman Central Catholic for the following year? Yes or no?
Yes.
That is a true story. There you go. Fact. From the young man's mouth himself, it actually did happen. And that, Marcus, that's just how good you are, man.
Oh,
that
yeah.
You make that type of an impression to where it's like, you know what? We got to get that dude. BJ, what is it like to be around a young man like Marcus Sitko?
Well, he is a very unique young man. I told him about three times a day that he's lucky he was fast this year. But in all seriousness, we joke around a lot. But it's been very fun to see his development, you know, because kids come in their freshman year, you know, nobody's the kid they're going to be 4 years later. And
at least you hope not.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if I've seen a kid develop as much mentally as he did physically. The way, you know, Marcus came in with it as a great athlete, but, you know, just to see the maturity he developed over the last 4 years, you know, the selflessness he developed. He talked about not getting to run the 200, but the reason he didn't get to run the 200 at the state meet is because he made a decision that he wanted to run the 4x1 to try to help that team qualify for state. And we actually did win the race and ended up getting disqualified.
Actually,
afterwards.
Speaking about that, I told Mullinex I would do this. I got to give a shout out to Mullinex for crossing the line there. I really hope you're listening right now. I could just see your face and how mad you're getting right now. Just had to throw that in there.
Nice.
But you know, that just, I think that spoke to the athlete he became. He became a much more team oriented, even though he was an incredible individual athlete. You know, the first day after I got the head football job, I'm in the weight room, and Marcus shows up in the weight room, and he's showing kids how to do a power clean correctly. And he's, and that's just the kind of young man he was. You know, he was always helping the younger jumpers in the long jump and trying to show them, you know, trying to improve their technique and stuff. So, like I said, over the course of 4 years, he really, you know, became that guy that you hope a good athlete's going to become. And that was as much fun as watching any of his as athletic exploits on the field and on the track along the way.
And when your best player or best athlete is also the hardest worker on the team, that makes a coach's job a heck of a lot different and easier.
It really does, yeah. And that's also a great thing for the younger athletes to see is, you know, here's this guy, he's, you know, coasting to the finish line and winning races by 10 or 15 yards, and yet he's working harder than me in the weight room, and he's still going out, you know, he does his workouts harder than anybody else. And so that's, you know, certainly something that younger athletes look up to and say, well, you know, if he's not too good to do the workout, then right. You know, I guess I'm not either, you know, so.
Marcus, what is it about BJ Ogata as a coach that you just really think, you know what, that's special, that's good?
I mean, describing Ogata.
That could be a dangerous feat, huh?
This could be dangerous. Just, I don't know. He's more of a layback coach. You know, he pushes the team. But I would say he's layback. I wish he would have pushed the jumpers and everyone a little harder. But, you know, he's easy to talk to. You know, let's say I was having trouble with my form. I would go to Ogata. Mm-hmm. He's smartest guy I know about sports, for one. He knows everything. And he's got these little cards on his desk that I've never seen him get an answer wrong. You flip it, you know, it's a question. He always gets them right. And it's crazy how good he is at just knowing stuff that he's never done before. And it's really interesting and good to see, because I could go to him and be like, okay, what do I need to work on for triple? What do I need to work on out of my blocks? And he knows instantly. I don't think he's ever ran 100 before, like, in a meet.
I did, but it was a long time ago. I did not run very fast.
But just the fact that he knows what he's talking about, it really helps an athlete, especially in the track program when you're an individual, help them succeed. I really feel like he's a really good coach to know his stuff.
And BJ, I would think that's about as good of an endorsement as a coach can get from a star athlete is, I can talk to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you always hope you have that relationship with your athletes that you approachable but respected at the same time. You know, you don't want it to be a buddy relationship, but you want it to be something where you know that you know you can get through to them, but you also know that they're not afraid to come to you with things as well.
And I would think a football coach has to straddle that line maybe more than other coaches, like the friendly slash harsh ruler, because it's such a physical game, so there's things demanded of a football player that aren't necessarily demanded of other sports. But at the same time, it's such a physical game that when you get beat down, you got to be there to pick them up.
Yeah, I don't know if there is a sport that's as emotional as football.
There you go.
And has the different ups and downs and the different things, even within one play that can happen. So you do have to have you have to know when to be firm and when to draw a line and it's time to get serious and it's time to maybe discipline somebody. But at the same time, you're going through it with the kids at the same time, and you're feeling all the emotions that they're feeling, and you have to be cognizant of that. You have to understand that this kid just had a bad play. Mm-hmm. I'm mad and he's mad too, and so it's we have to come back together. I've got to find out how to get this kid so he can come back the next play and be ready to play. You have to have a short memory, and that's something that you definitely have to have a grasp of that as a football coach. Even I think you look at every successful coach, whether it was a real strict disciplinarian, someone who was really, really harsh, or someone who is more laid back, your quote-unquote players coach, I think the one thing they all have in common is their players know they care about them. And that's I don't think the style matters as much as being able to build that relationship with the players and know that that you have their best interest in mind all the time.
And that's not something that could be faked.
No, I think if you try to be someone you're not, kids see through it quicker than anybody else. So you can't do that. You can't try to coach in a style that isn't the way you coach.
And you're the third head football coach at Staunton in 3 years, and that's got to be all the more important that they chose you since you've been there the entire time, so they're not bringing in another outsider. Not to say it would be bad for another outsider, but just for the kids' sake, there'll be some familiarity there with the system.
Yeah, it definitely is going to help me. And the other thing that helps is this is a group. My son's going to be a sophomore, and so it's a group of kids that a lot of them I've watched grow up.
Right.
And so there is a lot of familiarity there. I know a lot of their talent levels and where they fit in and the style of play that they're good at. And so I feel like I am in a very unique position to be able to put kids where they're going to have the best chance to succeed. That somebody if somebody had come in from outside the district might not have had that perspective.
You can't just say hand the ball to 49 anymore. So
no,
as you
or
look
throw it, or throw it to him or put him somewhere on a kickoff where he gets it.
You've obviously been around football. You've been involved in the fresh sophomore team with Staunton for a number of years now. But let's talk about what folks can expect from BJ Ogata's philosophy. What are you going to try to do when people come out on Friday night and see the Bulldogs? What are they going to see?
I think the most important thing that I try to stress is, we're going to put as much time into preparation as we need to during the week. We're going to pay as much attention to detail as any team in the conference, and we're going to be prepared to play on Friday night. Whether we win or lose, we're going to be confident we came into the game knowing what we needed to do, and hopefully that we played as hard as we could the whole time. That's the one thing I try to stress, that every athlete has as much of as anybody else's effort. Right? The one thing that a freshman on the football team has the same amount of as Marcus Itko is effort. And that's if you can get the right effort out of every kid on the field, you can live with the results. And I think that's going to hopefully be the hallmark of our program, is we're going to be prepared, and we're going to play hard and hopefully have a lot of fun along the way too.
And the thing about the South Central is it's going to be a fist fight every single night. There's been a bit more spread offense coming in over the last years to the league, but you still know
it's
that
still
you go to Pena
league,
you go to Vandale, you know what you're getting.
And that was the thing, we came in a couple years ago, a team that went 4-5, and we had been in the Prairie State for a couple years, and we came in our first game right out the gate, we beat Pena like 49-7. And the next day, kids were talking about how sore they were and how much. And that was the big difference between the two conferences, is if you had a game in the Prairie State that you won big, you probably had the other team overmatched and it wasn't as physical a game. The South Central, it didn't matter whether you win big or win close or lose. You came out of the game. You come out of the game knowing that you played a football game, and it's every week's a physical week. From the top to bottom, I think it's as good a small school football conference as there is in the state, and so you're right. You gotta earn every week.
Marcus, how long after the football season is over does it take for you to feel like you're back to 100% physically? If ever.
Well,
I don't know.
Junior year, about 6 weeks, I was toast after. Yeah.
That was a long year that year, yeah.
This year, a few days.
Wow.
I will not lie. And there's some things about that, but yeah. Don't have to get into that.
No, not at all.
But, yeah, it only took me a few days to recover this year, but, it happens, I guess.
Worked out good for the track season.
When you play five extra games, it does take a little, extra toll.
You make a deep playoff run in high school, you are getting to basically a full extra half season. That's serious stuff.
Yeah, and that it does take its toll. Honestly, I was amazed that we stayed as healthy as we did that year. We did lose down the stretch. We lost Blaine Ray from the defensive backfield, who was starting to play real well. But we got Jake back right before the playoffs started, and we stayed pretty remarkably healthy, which I think was maybe one of the biggest reasons we made that run is, if you can keep kids healthy while other teams are going to losing a kid here and there, you definitely put yourself in a better position to succeed then.
BJ Ogata and Marcus Sitko, thank you so much for coming into studio today. Awesome talking with you guys. And Marcus, before he lets you get out of here, let people know where you will be at come the fall.
I am going to the University of Central Missouri to run track.
How
about that? What a surprise. I'm going to be a mule.
Mule? That's their nickname?
Yeah.
The Mules.
That's fighting solid. Mules.
The Fighting Mules.
I believe they're the only NCAA school to be the Mules.
That's a good one. Stands out.
It should be interesting. And I do got to do one thing real fast. It's kind of cliche, but everyone does it. I got to say I love my mother, love my father. Even though I hate to say it, I love my brother. He knows it, even though I don't show it. My mom was probably the biggest help throughout my high school career. She's a massage therapist. I would come home, 11 o'clock at night, be like, Mom, I'm dead. Going downstairs, let's take the tool to your legs or something. And she's been a big help. My brother has always kind of been there. He's that
there
guy.
There were air quotes involved there.
Yeah, he's that guy that – he never really showed me 100%, but he was my motivation. So I guess it's solid there.
Awesome. That's good stuff. Marcus, thank you so much, and best of luck in the fall, sir. Keep
thank
in touch.
You. Always.
BJ Ogata, we'll talk to you in the fall, sir.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Football Friday will be here soon.
Not soon enough.
Yeah.
Awesome. So BJ Ogata, Marcus Sitko, thank you so much for your time this morning. We thank the folks associated with the Bud Reineke Memorial Golf Tournament for coming in as well. That event will be a week from today at Indian Springs, beginning at 8:30. If you would like to be involved with that, you can call out here to the radio station in T-Tote. We'll get you set up. That is it for Sports Saturday on your 50,000-watt sports voice of Mid-Illinois. This is WSMI FM, Litchfield, Hillsboro, Carthenville, and Greenville. For Terry, David, I'm Tim. Have a great weekend, everybody.